It is about 11:30 in the evening, and it is quiet here in Rome. Almost no cars in the streets. And I'm walking from my hotel here towards the dome of St. Peter's Basilica that is right here in front of me. It's towering over me, actually. This is one of the hotels that is closest to the Vatican. I just arrived earlier in the evening, flying in from Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. Smooth flight, unlike last month when I tried to get to Rome, but it was snowing so much in the Netherlands that all flights had been cancelled, and I ultimately arrived at towards 2 o'clock in the morning. Today, fortunately, the weather was a lot better. And so we arrived here around, I guess, 8 o'clock, 8:30, rented a car and drove to this hotel that we booked weeks ago. In fact, this the original reason that I was going to Rome was to film a couple of new episodes of my Vatican segment for the TV show that I present on Dutch television. And so to save costs, we travel to Rome every once in a while and make a couple of episodes that we then spread out over the weeks after that. However, everything changed, of course, in the past few days when Pope Benedict on Monday, and I'm recording this, by the way, on Sunday evening, Pope Benedict announced on Monday of the last week that he would step down. Unprecedented. For centuries, since the 15th century, we've not seen a pope do this. So he's going to step down and make place for a new pope. He will step down on February the 28th. And of course, the whole world is in shock and is trying to adapt. And this trip was already planned. But now that I'm here, and I will be staying till Wednesday evening, we're still going to make a few reports. But of course, the angle will change, and we will talk a lot about the upcoming conclave and the resignation of Pope Benedict. And we will talk to a lot of people that live here in the city of Rome, crossing the road here right now. And it's exceptionally quiet. I'm surprised. Rome is usually extremely busy, even at this time of the evening. But right now, it's almost as if everybody just retired and went home. So we're going to talk about them, about, you know, their memories of Pope Benedict and his pontificate, and also expectations of, you know, the conclave and the new pope. So it's a chilly night. I expected Rome to be a lot warmer. I saw on the weather report that during the day, temperatures were almost like in springtime. But since we're still in the month of February, at night, it cools down quite a bit. I'm walking here, actually, and just even without a coat. Just came from a small restaurant near the Vatican, which is kind of our favorite restaurant whenever we are here. That's where we always go. Great service, very simple, cheap, just great people there. And I had a nice pasta con vongole, which is basically seafood. So it's pasta with seafood. It's light. I was hungry after a long flight like that, or it's actually not a very long flight. It's about an hour and 50 minutes, but I hadn't eaten since lunch. So it's always nice to have dinner in Rome. Passing some people waiting for one of the last buses here. Public transport will soon cease their service, usually around midnight, and then you have to just walk or take a cab. But I figured, you know, after dinner, I was actually, I'm dead tired. I've been working almost nonstop this past week. Ever since the announcement of the Pope, I've been on so many radio and TV shows. I did plenty of interviews. I can't even count them anymore. Passing a fountain here on my left. This is actually, on my left is the wall of Vatican City. So you always have streaming water everywhere in Rome. And it's drinkable. It's It's good water, actually. And in summertime, that's actually great. Instead of buying these expensive plastic bottles with water, it's much better to just grab a bottle and fill it with the water from these fountains, because it's totally drinkable and safe. So I figured, let's just go to St. Peter's Square. Since we're here, you know, let me just take you with me on this late evening. And despite the fact that I'm very tired, you know, I'm just here for a couple of days, so I don't want to miss the opportunity to take you with me in these historic times. I was here with you as a listener in 2005 as well, when Pope John Paul II was so ill, and took a cab to the Gemelli Hospital, and we witnessed the evening of his death, and then the conclave and the election of Pope Benedict. And now I'm here in 2013, and again, these are historic times. It's unbelievable. Again, you're witnessing something that I didn't expect to happen at all. So I'm here, by the way, on the left side of the arms of St. Peter's Square. I saw a video of Father Barron, actually, where he shows a picture of St. Peter's Square, and he says that that's what the Catholic Church is all about. It's like stretching out the arms to embrace the world. I thought it was a beautiful symbolic interpretation of the architecture of this square. But I'm actually behind the left arm of the columns here in front of me. By the way, beautifully restored. All this has been cleaned up a couple of years ago, so it all looks still beautifully white and nicely lit. I can see just the left side of the facade of St. Peter's Basilica. By the way, in the background, there is a half moon, or well, actually less than half, there's a planet also. I wonder if that's Jupiter or something like that. It's a very, very bright planet in conjunction with the with the moon. And it's quite nice, actually. This is postcard material. The facade is still nicely lit. And here, right in front of me, is the gate, one of the main gates that leads to the Paul VI Hall, which is the big hall that is used usually during winter times for the audiences on Wednesday, and also for conferences and other things. Behind that, you have one of the other meeting halls where the cardinals, before the conclave, will gather, usually almost on a daily basis, to listen to each other. They have the occasion to speak, usually for about 7 minutes. That is where a lot of the decisions are made as to who the next pope is going to be. Of course, the ultimate decision will be taken behind closed doors in the chapel, the Sistine Chapel. But as you can imagine, a lot of these cardinals don't often get together here. And so they need time to get to know each other. And that's why they have these pre-conclave meetings. And I still remember this gate from back in 2005, when I actually almost snuck in here. Usually, now the gate is closed. It's a metal gate, and it's electronically closed, and undoubtedly also under surveillance by cameras. But during the day, you have Swiss guards standing there. And I happened to know that there was going to be a mass at St. Peter's Basilica, celebrated in commemoration of Pope John Paul II. And so I, at the time, thought, well, why don't I just combine celebrating this mass and perhaps getting a glimpse of these pre-conclave meetings. And I remember taking my recorder with me, and I was able, because I was going to concelebrate, the Swiss guards let me through, and I bumped into all the cardinals that were outside. They actually just had finished their morning session, and they were just standing there chatting outside in the sun. It was in April, so it was The weather was okay. It was almost springtime. And I still remember, I bumped into the Cardinal Lustiger of Paris, which was one of my great heroes at the time. He unfortunately is deceased. But he's from Jewish origin, converted to Catholicism, and is one of the most impressive bishops of the 20th century. Such a broad knowledge, such a huge cultural impact also in France. And I remember having a short conversation. I was a fanboy. I was like, oh, I can't believe it's you. And I spoke to him in French a little bit, introduced myself. He was already ill at the time and died not too long after the conclave and the election of Pope Benedict. And then I remember seeing in the corner of my eye Cardinal Ratzinger smoking a cigarette, which kind of shocked me. I was like, wow, I didn't know he was a smoker. outside and talking to a few colleagues of him. And I remember that at that moment, I almost felt that, you know, I'm looking at the next pope. And I don't exactly remember what I said on the recording, but I felt that I was almost certain. And then a couple of days later, of course, after the conclave, it turned out to be the right call. So I always remember that little adventure, a little bit illegal, you know, in hindsight, but still so much fun and just the power of podcasting. So here I am at the Vatican, looking at St. Peter's Square, just past the columns on the left side, and I can see the fountain on the right side. It's still on. The one on the left side is not functioning for some reason. Square is almost entirely empty. You just see two or three tourists. I think they just climbed over a fence. It seems to me that the entire square is closed. I'm not sure. There are two police cars of the Vatican security guard standing on the right side. That's usually where you enter the square. Of course, the obelisk in the center is lit by the orange lamps. And again, I'm just stunned to see how quiet it is. I expected a lot more, I don't know, just business here with the camera crews and everything. But I guess that they covered the first few days after this announcement, after this surprise announcement. And now everybody's just waiting for what's going to happen next. Also, of course, Pope Benedict is awaiting the next step. I'm looking at his window. Normally, at the time when Pope John Paul II was still alive, I always came here in the evening and even late at night. At this time, the light would always be on in his study room, and because he was known to be someone who worked late hours, always writing, always up early, not much sleep. Pope Benedict has, I think, been much more careful with his boundaries and knowing that he had to preserve his strength and his forces. He usually goes to bed a lot earlier than Pope John Paul II. But I still see a little bit of light. It's almost as if the how would you call those things in front of the window? The blinds are closed, but he might still be there. Or someone is, I don't know. I hope that he gets plenty of rest. Of course, the interesting thing is, and it's almost hard to imagine, but earlier today, this morning, there was a huge crowd, a record crowd, gathered here on this same square, underneath the window of Pope Benedict, and he spoke to the crowds. He usually on Sunday at noon does the Angelus prayer, and takes advantage of the occasion to speak to the people that are there. And today he spoke about about Lent, and it's kind of cool. I mean, he's not just focusing everything on himself. He's an extremely humble person. So his job right now, and I say job, of course, it doesn't really apply to being a pope, but his mission right now is to be a pastor, is to guide people, to help them. And that's what he's going to do until the last day. He's just going to do what he has to do. And so this morning he spoke about Lent and about Lent being a time of spiritual battle. It's he referred to the gospel that we always read, which is about the temptation of Jesus in the desert, where he faces the devil, and the devil is trying to mispresent the Messiah and is proposing to Jesus certain earthly goods, you know, not necessarily evil. He's not going to tell Jesus, oh, why don't you just go around and use your power to kill everyone on the planet. I mean, it's much more subtle than that. He's like, well, why don't you turn these stones into bread, and why don't you just take the power that, you know, that you deserve being the Son of Christ. And so the Pope said basically what the devil is doing there is diminishing God. It's like, if you prefer earthly goods, even though in itself it's not evil, I mean, it's not bad to eat bread or even to turn stone into bread, it still is a sign that God is not enough for you, and that you choose something physical, something that is ultimately just created above God himself. And so that's also our challenge. It's always to prefer God above anything else. And so that's what he spoke about, just a little bit of catechesis in multiple languages. I see the police officers there all around, crowded around their blue police car. And we're just looking at something in the back of the car. What I think is that they're just going to be on guard for the rest of the night. Probably also, there's another car arriving. Never see cars like that driving on St. Peter's Square itself. Usually they use these golf carts to just patrol the area. But I guess that in these days they just want to keep the journalists out, and that's probably wise. I mean, you want to keep things under control, especially because everybody is, of course, in on high alert, because we don't know yet when the conclave will begin, and we don't know anything about how many people will be here during the audiences and the few public appearances that the Pope has still scheduled. I guess they just want to keep everything under control. It's going to be actually a very quiet week here, in terms of, for the Pope at least, and for his collaborators. This is traditionally the week during which they have their annual Lenten retreat. And it's one of the cardinals, I think one of the Italian cardinals, but I'm not sure, who's preaching that retreat. He's on Twitter, by the way, tweeting in Italian, of course. Why tweet in a language that everyone can understand? I mean, that baffles me. It's like, at least, if you're Italian yourself, also just retweet in English, so at least a larger portion of the world can follow you. But I still think it's kind of cool that the cardinal that is going to be part of the conclave, who is now right now preaching this Lenten retreat for the Pope and his collaborators, is also on Twitter. I mean, who could have thunk a couple of years ago that the Vatican would be this involved in social media? It's very, very cool. But that's going to be going on in the Vatican. So all the usual work is kind of halted, and the Pope is just going to meditate on Lent. And, you know, well-deserved. This must have been a very taxing week for him, just full of emotions, especially. Not really work as such, but just having made that decision. Can you imagine that? This is not just life-changing, this is history-changing. So it must have been an incredible week for him, with lots of emotions. And part of those emotions he showed this morning at the window of his study, when he spoke to the crowds here. He thanked once again all the pilgrims that were there for their prayers and for their support. And it must be incredibly comforting to see that outpour of support and love and prayer for him. It must fill him with confidence. So I'm now walking on the sidewalk here, away from St. Peter's Square, and in front of the of the stores here, this is the Galleria Savelli, Mosaici Artistici, so this is one of the tourist stores, basically one of the more upscale tourist stores. There are homeless people sleeping there, covered in, fortunately they have blankets, because it's really cold. I guess it must be at just around freezing point right now. But they sleep there, unless they get chased away by the police, but I guess it's so quiet, I can't imagine that they will do that right now. And here on my right, you see the white tents of the various broadcasting companies. Actually, there's a film crew there setting up a camera with a light. This is a fenced-off area. This is normally a parking place, or this is part of the big square in front of St. Peter's Square, so it's not really part of the Vatican. This is actually territory of the city of Rome, but they closed it off here with these red, white, I don't know exactly how you call it. It's kind of the police stuff that you see around crime scenes. You know what I mean. Plastic stuff. And so there's a camera crew setting up a camera and a light, possibly to do a live satellite connection. This is usually, there are two places actually where they build up these big scaffolding constructions. And I remember doing an interview here live on satellite for Dutch television in 2005, and actually there were two floors. So right now there's just two tents here, and I can hear a little bit of conversation going on the inside. It says Eurovision. What I guess is that on the inside you just have technicians, perhaps an editing crew. They might have some basic equipment, and that's about it. And then there are a few satellite vans here. There is a Rai Uno, which is Italian television. They have a satellite dish. Here's another white van that's kind of nondescript. There's no brand on it. This is usually just hired a long time in advance. Oh, this is actually Associated Press. So they have their own satellite van here. And of course, they cater to the world, so and there is probably a presenter right now in front of that camera, ready to do his live transmission from the Vatican. Of course, you could just do that with green screen, because nothing is going on here on St. Peter's Square. But I guess it's just, that's why I'm here doing my podcast as well. It's just the thrill of being here right where it happens, you know, where history is being made. And this will grow explode almost in the next couple of weeks in preparation for the conclave. So we have this location here. This is actually quite close to the Vatican. Of course, these are the most expensive locations to rent, and usually there are contracts that have been signed years ago, and they pay a very hefty monthly fee in order to be able to use these facilities. Now there are a few other places from which they're broadcasting. One is on the total opposite side of where I am right now, and I'm looking down the big avenue, the Via della Conciliazione, and all the way towards the end, there's another road that is it's kind of a T-junction. When you drive that way, actually you can't, because it's one direction only. And there is the square in front of the Castel Sant'Angelo, which is the big fortress that was used by popes in the past whenever there was a war. They could actually, there's a Passetto, which is a small hidden road. It's built on top of a wall where the Pope could flee with his personnel to the fortress of Sant'Angelo, and they would just sit there and wait for the enemy to go away. Well, that square has a very nice view of St. Peter's Basilica and of the avenue. Nice depth to it. It's a beautiful location. And so they will probably build up some scaffolding there and some tents there to do more live broadcasting during the conclave. It's actually surprisingly quiet and normal here. I expected, as I said, a lot more activity. But I guess that everybody's still waiting to see what will happen. The thing is, and I'm not just, I was just for a second, I thought I might just walk down this avenue and see if anything's going on that square in front of Casa San Angelo, but I don't think there is, so it would be basically a waste of time. I'll probably just head back to the hotel, because it's really cold. I'm walking underneath the... this is on the right side of the... This is the entrance to the Sala Stampa, so the press office of the Vatican. This is usually where the press conferences take place. So whenever you see a video with Father Lombardi speaking to the international press, here, that's in there. Very modern building. There are some offices there. And this is usually where the press gathers to get their latest information and the press releases and everything. This is also the place where you can ask for what they call accreditation. So if you want to cover anything in the Vatican, you need a permit for that. And you need to be a recognized journalist, or at least work for a recognized entity. So you have to apply. It has become a little bit easier than it was in the past, but still, you have to go through that procedure. Otherwise, you are not allowed to film or record. And actually, what I learned the hard way was that there are different types of permissions. If you have a permit to do video, you cannot do radio. If you just have a permit to do radio or podcasting, well, they don't have anything for podcasting. They probably don't even know what it is. But you can't walk around with a camera. At least not with a professional one. So you have to be careful. And I noticed that myself when I wasn't at one of those press conferences in 2005. And I was just sitting there. I did get an accreditation. Because the only thing they needed was a letter from my bishop. And, well, the cardinal used to be... He happened to be here for the conclave. So he was also doing these pre-conclave meetings. And so he just wrote me a little note. And I got my little press card. Which, of course, was super cool, because what was I? I was just a priest from the Netherlands, and I was doing something that was called podcasting that nobody had heard of, and posting that on an internet website. But then I was at that conference, and I was at one point, I think, taking pictures and recording what was going on, and then someone just walks towards me and just takes me out of the crowd. It's like, this is an absolute... No, you cannot record anything here. You don't have a permit for that. You're not a legitimate journalist. And so if you do this once more, and it was very threatening. I remember how I was really impressed. There was like, if you do this once more, it will put you on the blacklist. And then there is no way in the world that you can do anything here anymore. I think they've lightened up a little bit. But man, I was a little bit miffed about that. I was like, come on. I'm on your side, you know. I'm not trying to do anything evil here. I'm just trying to share what's going on. But anyway, those memories, those were the days. Adventure. So the thing is, right now, nobody knows when the conclave will start. An hour ago, when we were still at the restaurant, I bumped into... Joan from EWTN. She works for the Eternal Word Television Network. So EWTN is just a very big Catholic broadcast organization in the United States. And Joan Lewis, that's her last name. She's been working here for a lot of years, and she actually interviewed me when I was here for the International Vatican Bloggers Conference, I had a very nice conversation with her back then, about an hour, one of those restaurants, and enjoyed it a lot. And she's very experienced here, and she has been working all over the world, but this is kind of the place where she just covers whatever is happening in Rome and in the Vatican. And so we were just eating, and I hear this voice, and I know this voice. This has to be Joan from EWTN. So after our meal, I walked towards her and we talked a little bit. That was a nice surprise. And she too, she's like, well, nobody knows what's going to happen. They can totally change the date. And she told me that during one of the press conferences on Wednesday, she had already asked a question to Father Lombardi. Is like, well, you know, canonically or according to the rules, a conclave has to start no earlier than 15 days after the sede vacante, so the seat of the Holy Father being empty, and no later than 20 days. But, she had said, this is a totally different situation, because normally there is always a period of mourning, a novena of 9 days, and you need those 9 days for the funeral of the Pope and then just all the official rituals that have to be followed whenever a Pope dies. And so you could just subtract those 9 days and start the conclave earlier. And then at first, she told me, Father Lombardi was like, no, you know, it's just going to be, we're just going to follow the rules. And then that tone changed. And just yesterday, I think, so again, I'm recording this on Sunday, in case you're listening to this later, which is probably the case, Father Lombardi changed kind of the tune and it's like, well, you know, we're thinking about, it might be possible that it's going to be earlier, and some people are studying the rules and the interpretations, because apparently you cannot just change the rules like that. It has to be approved by the Pope. So they can do two things. Either they can say, well, you know, if we interpret what John Paul II, this is part of the rules that John Paul II instituted. If we interpret what he said, then what these rules apply to a situation where the Pope dies, which, you know, for 600 years or more was the case. And so these rules are not applicable in this situation, because this is a new situation, so we can make an exception to the rule. So that's one way to go and to justify it, let's say, an earlier conclave. The second possibility is that Pope Benedict, since he is still in office right now, publishes a motu proprio, so it would be like a, it's kind of a, like a law that the Pope promulgate, in which he says, you know, in this situation, when a Pope steps down, then it's possible to change the date of the conclave or the time period between the moment of stepping down and the start of a conclave. However, something needs to be said about this, and then, you know, who is going to take this decision? Are they going to wait until the cardinals will arrive here and probably a lot of these cardinals will travel to Rome to say goodbye to Pope Benedict. I mean, this is, again, it's history in the making. Pope Benedict is going to disappear from the public eye. He's going to live here behind these walls here on the right. I'm walking back to my hotel, so again, walking beside the big walls of the Vatican. There is a monastery there that's currently being renovated. It used to be the home for a congregation of sisters. And the sisters, the congregation that was there left a while ago, and so it was empty, and they started to renovate it. And Pope Benedict has said, that's where I want to live. So it's not ready yet. They're still upgrading it. Or whatever. It's not that old, by the way. I think it was built during the pontificate of Pope John Paul II, who thought it would be nice if there was the possibility, at least, for contemplative nuns to live within the walls of Vatican City. That's why they created that monastery. So it's not very old, but it has to be renovated. So at first, Pope Benedict will actually take a helicopter on the evening of February the 28th, we'll fly to Castel Gandolfo, which is his summer residence, and he will stay there. I mean, everything is there. He's got it. He is there at least a month, or if not longer, during the summer holiday. So everything is in order. They don't have to, you know, make all sorts of adjustments for his stay there. So he will wait there, live there for a while, until the apartment here or the monastery. It's actually quite big. It's 4 stories high. So, and there will not be a new congregation of sisters. There was a bit of confusion. Like, people thought that he was going to live inside a basically closed community of sisters, which would be a bit strange, but the Vatican has said, no, the sisters, there will not be a new group of sisters there. So he will actually have a lot of space there. It's four stories, there's a chapel, it's got everything he needs, and it's kind of fenced off of the rest of the Vatican. So he could, I think, disappear from the public eye, which is probably what they want, because you can't, you know, if the new pope is there, you don't want the old one to just walk around there and, you know, it's going to be very confusing to people. So, with that in mind, you know, knowing that from the moment of February 28th, we will never see him again, probably, at least not the way we're used to, a lot of cardinals will want to say goodbye to their colleague, basically. I mean, they were all cardinals together, and Pope Benedict, even before he became a pope, was so well known, and he had great contacts. How that's one of his qualities was that he knew so many people, and during the period of mourning when Pope John Paul II died, as the dean of the cardinals, I think that was his function. Right now it's Sodano, but he is older than 80 years old, so he will not be taking part in the conclave. But Pope Benedict was still, I think he was 75 or something like that at the time. So he knew everyone, being the dean of the College of Cardinals. And so I think that a lot of these cardinals, and some of which have been created cardinal under his pontificate, they will want to be here to say goodbye and to be there on that last big farewell. It's not really going to be a party. It's going to be very low-key. But still, they want to be here. So if a lot of these cardinals are already in Rome, it kind of makes sense to start the conclave earlier. And so a lot of us, you know, journalists, and I'm not a journalist, but I work for National Catholic Radio and Television, we all assumed if they would follow the rules, that the conclave would start around, well, the 15th of March would be a bit strange, because that's a Friday, I think. It didn't feel right to start a conclave just before the weekend. And so we were speculating that probably it would be the 18th. And as you can imagine, you know, the whole world is going to be here. So it's very hard to book flights and to get a hotel. So we all made those reservations as soon as we were able to kind of, you know, guesstimate the start of the conclave. Right now, it's possible, very well possible, that the conclave will start, let's say, within a week after Pope Benedict stepping down. Because all the cardinals are... a lot of them are already going to be here, and many of them could even book right now if they would hear that news. And so it totally messes up my plans, and I don't even know if I will be able to come here if they change the date, because, you know, it might very well be that it's impossible to get a flight. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And, you know, I kind of want to be here, and even if it's impossible to get here by plane, well, ultimately, you know, last resort, I could rent a car and just drive here. It would be crazy, and just sleep under a bridge or something. I just feel that I want to be here when this happens. Anyway, we'll wait and see. I mean, that's ultimately not really my concern. And usually this stuff just kind of sorts itself out. I mean, I'm here right now, which I didn't expect to be. So that's already very cool. The conclave could start a lot earlier, and then one of the big advantages of that is this conclave might last a little bit longer than last time. Last time it just took one day, but again, when I was speaking with Joan, she was like, you know, I think it's going to be 2 days, 3 days max, you know. It would be, and the reason, of course, is that there's not a very clear candidate. There's not, just like with Ratzinger, everybody was like, well, that is such, it's just the most, it's the perfect candidate to take over from John Paul II, because, it, you know, he was his right hand, so it made sense. This time, there are many good candidates, and so it might take longer to, you know, decide who is really the person that we need right now in the church. So But if they would start the conclave earlier, it would mean that they can all go home way before the start of Holy Week, which is, of course, the most important liturgical week in the Catholic Church. It starts with Palm Sunday, and all these cardinals have their duties at home. Their flock awaits them for this important week. And so if they would start on the 18th, it theoretically, if the conclave lasts more than a week, and, you know, that's not unprecedented in history. I mean, the last century, it's always been just a couple of days, so it would be exceptional, but you never know. It could happen. Then there is at least theoretically the chance that that they wouldn't be home for Palm Sunday. Now, if you move this up, or if you start the conclave earlier, then they could, you know, that wouldn't be a problem anymore. And so Joan was speculating, well, perhaps it might happen that the inauguration of the new pope takes place on St. Patrick's Day. Or other people said, well, perhaps on the Feast of St. Joseph, both of which I think would be quite wonderful. I mean, imagine St. Patrick's Day. We could all drink green beer in honor of the Pope, and I think it would add a whole new dimension to St. Patrick's Day. It might become, instead of this American-Irish thing, it might become something just global, at least for the, especially if we get a Pope Patrick or something like that. But anyway, that's probably not going to happen. But it's going to be interesting, at least, you know, even though I would prefer this to just follow the rules, just start the 15th, because then I know I will be here in Rome. And so even if they change it, even if it's earlier, it's still an adventure. I mean, I'm thrilled to be here. And you can tell probably from my voice that despite the fact that I have a cold right now and I have a sore throat and it's very late and I should be in bed because tomorrow I have to start working at 6 o'clock, or at least I have to get out of bed at 6 o'clock, and 7 o'clock we're going to start our filming. You know, I'm excited. This is, again, it's just a once-in-a-lifetime situation, and I'm so glad that I'm able to share this with you, even though it's late, but I hope you enjoyed this. So that's my update. It's been an incredible week. This Sunday, I think, has been very special and important to the Pope. You just see that huge crowd. And normally, on Sunday, there is a sizable crowd, but just a couple of thousands. Now, it was just the entire square was, and even beyond that, even in the Via della Conciliazione, there were just plenty and plenty of people applauding and cheering. And, you know, that must be so comforting in these, I wouldn't say difficult times, because it might be a huge relief for the Pope to have made this decision and made it public, but still, you know, it's turning everything upside down. So just to feel that people are praying for you, I know from personal experience how important that can be and how incredibly strong of a support that is. I'm pretty sure that for Pope Benedict it is the same. So it's been an incredible day. I'm so glad to be here on this Sunday in this, you know, earth-shattering, history-changing week. And again, I'm glad to be able to share it with you. I hope you enjoyed it. And, well, I will certainly be back. I don't know when. I don't know what exactly is going to happen. But you can be sure that I will be recording about this. So, take care from Rome. I'm here in front of the entrance to the hotel, and I'm just looking at the beautiful yellow blue dome of St. Peter's Basilica. I'm saying goodbye and good night if you're listening to this in the evening, or have a great day if you're listening to this on another moment of the day. And I will talk to you soon. Check out sqpn.com for updates. God bless.